first day of Rosh Hashanah.
So we saw yesterday a very interesting topic that I want to develop today, that first of all, Elkanah said to Hannah, Alo Anochi Tov Lach Ma'asara Banim, am I not better for you than 10 children? How can he say such a thing? She wants a child. And the answer is like this. We are going to speak of this today, and then we'll go back to the prayer of Rosh Hashanah. You know, it's a very wide topic. Indeed, Moshe said at the end of his life, Chagani, Moshe said, Ubachachta b'chayim. Could you translate? Ubachachta b'chayim. The last counsel, the last advice, the last thing that Moshe said in his life. He was a counselor, Moshe Rabbeinu. And he said, Ubachachta b'chayim. You will choose
life.
So, what does it mean, life? What is to live? To live is not only to eat, to drink, to breathe, to sleep. To live is to give a meaning to your life. That's the reason why when it's said in the Shema, V'shinantam levanecha, you will teach these commandments to your children. Rashi said there, levanecha elu atalmidim. Who are your children? Your pupils. Why? Because when you teach someone Torah, you give him life, in the full meaning of life. Of course, we have an obligation to bring to this world as much as we can two children, a boy and a girl. But besides this, there is a wider conception of life. When you give a meaning to the life of someone, you make him live, because otherwise his life is not a life. And that's the reason why it's written that if you have both your Rav and your father in jail, and you have to pay money in order to liberate them, to free them, yes, and you don't have enough money for both of them, to whom do you give the priority?
It's between the father and the mother.
Between the father and the Rav.
And the Rav.
You have your Rav, your master, Gani, who is in jail. And you have to pay a kind of ransom, let's say, I don't know how to say it in English.
Bailout?
No, because they are in jail, and they say, okay, we free them if you give some money in the meantime.
Like pay bail.
Yeah?
Bail.
Not bail. How do you say it? A bail.
A bail is a temporary, you don't go to jail until after the trial. This is
ransom.
Extortion. It's extortion.
No, it's legal. It's legal. In America, you have this. You pay someone in America if you are in jail.
The bail means to stay out of jail.
Yeah, that's it.
And you can't leave the country. That's the concept of bail.
This is exactly.
You're talking about, like, in the Middle Ages, the Goyim would capture Jews and hold them for ransom. And they say, you have to pay me 200,000 zlotys if you want to see me.
I think the halacha
is... Bail is a different...
I think the halacha is the same. Because there it says you have to pay money to free them. It can be ransom, it can be bail, but it doesn't change anything in the halacha. In the halacha is that you give the priority, Gani, to whom?
My father.
To the Rav. Why? Listen well. Because it's written, the father gave you life in this world, but the Rav gives you everlasting life. Yeah. Because Aviv evi oto lechaye olam hazeh, v'rabo evi oto lechaye olam haba. His father brought him to the life of this world, which is temporary, which will disappear one day. But the Rav led him up to the life which is everlasting. And that's the reason why you give the priority to the Rav. So you see here that the conception of life is widened in Judaism. Gani, be concentrated. Yeah? It means... it's okay. I understand. That means that you have to be very careful there, that life is a wide conception, so to give birth is also a wide conception. It's written in the Gemara Sanhedrin, and we come little by little to Elkanah and Hannah, little by little. Stage after stage, step by step. In the Quran, Samim is written, "Kol megadel yatom betoch beto maale alav akatuf ki ilu yeladu." Anyone who is raising an orphan in his house, the scripture counts it as if he gave birth to this child. And it's also written, "Kol amelamed ben chaverot Torah maale alav akatuf ki ilu yeladu." Anyone who teaches someone else Torah, it's counted as if he gave birth to this person, to such an extent that concerning the phrase, concerning the sentence, that if you raise an orphan in your home, it's counted as if you gave birth to this orphan, there is an issue which is developed by the Chochmat Shlomo. It's a commentary of the Shulchan Aruch. He's asking concerning adoption. If you adopt a child, a boy and a girl, can you be considered that you fulfill Piriyah V'Riviyah? He's asking the question. And he says, how can we solve such a question? And he says like this. It's written in the Gemara Sanhedrin that if you raise an orphan in your house, it's counted as if you gave birth. So he said, what is as if? As if keilu, he says, there is a machloikis, a discussion between the Taz and the Drisha. One of them says, as if means the same thing. And one of them says, as if is not exactly the same thing. It's something like this. So if you say that as if is exactly the same thing, so it's written in the Talmud as if you gave birth to this child. So you make Piriyah V'Riviyah. Because as if is the same thing. As if you gave birth. So you gave birth. But if you say that as if is more or less the same, but not exactly the same, so you didn't accomplish Piriyah V'Riviyah by raising an orphan in your home. The adoption is not considered as Piriyah V'Riviyah. That means, you know, the commandment of Piriyah V'Riviyah. Mm-hmm. Yes? Be fruitful and multiply.
First mitzvah.
Yes? Mm-hmm. You understand me?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so now the Chochmat Shlomo says, according to any opinion, even someone who tells you that as if is not exactly the same, according to any opinion, if someone had children and they died, and we know that if you had children, chas v'shalom, and they die, you didn't accomplish the mitzvah of procreation. Because to accomplish the mitzvah of procreation, it's written in Shulchan Aruch, you have to give birth to a boy and a girl, and they have to be alive at the moment that you die. Otherwise, you did not accomplish the mitzvah. He says, if someone gave birth to two children, a son and a daughter, and then they died, unfortunately, and then he adopted a boy and a girl, anyway, the Chochmat Shlomo says he accomplished the mitzvah of Piriyah V'Riviyah. He says why? Because if the mitzvah is just to give birth, he gave birth to a boy and a girl. Ah, they died. So if the mitzvah is to raise them, he raised a boy and a girl, although not the same, but he raised a boy and a girl. So anyway, he accomplished the mitzvah of Piriyah V'Riviyah. This is the commentary of the Shulchan Aruch Chochmat Shlomo. And Gani is going to ask me a question. I will tell you which question he is going to ask me. He will ask me, okay, he raised a boy and a girl, but they are not the same boy and girl that he gave birth to. Maybe the mitzvah of Piriyah V'Riviyah is to give birth to a boy and a girl and to raise them, not to raise others. This is the question that he wanted to ask me right now.
No, actually, that was another one. I actually,
well, if you look at our history...
Okay, listen to his question.
History,
because he raised his finger.
From day
first,
one...
Listen to his question first. Okay. Because he raised the finger.
Okay, well, there are some families that have only heard, unfortunately. But then there are my family, and my father's side, mostly. Like my father and my brother, they only have boys. there's no girls, there's just boys. Like, there are some families where they only have boys, they don't have daughters.
I will tell you what I think. My chavrusa in Paris, he's a rav. He has 8 daughters. He doesn't have any son. So he told me, my wife cannot have children anymore. So that's finished. It is what God gave me. What can I do? That means, Anus Rachmana Padre. God is asking only what is possible. God is not asking from you what is impossible. You have an obligation to try. You don't have an obligation to succeed. This is written in Pirkei Avot. Lo alicha melacha ligmor, aval iyata ben chorin leipater mimena. You don't have to finish the work, but on the other hand, you are not free to get rid of it. You don't have the freedom to get rid of it. You have to do the work. Ah, you didn't finish it. You are prevented from finishing the work. You couldn't go up to the end. Okay, it's another story. But in the meantime, you have to try as much as you can.
Okay. I know in our history, maybe 30 years or 20 years ago, my understanding is that there were one or two or three Hasidic rabbis who had only daughters, and they were widowers, okay, so they wanted to have sons, okay, so they married women, I guess, in the early 40s, they were in the 70s, 80s, or whatever it's going to be. One of them passed away about 2 months after the wedding. One of them had a daughter, and the other one couldn't have any children, so they tried, you know, and they had the resources, but you can't, that's upstairs. In other words, he tried his best, as he said, but it didn't, even that didn't work, you know. So, the other thing is, with Yibam, my understanding is, before we do Chalitza today, but not Yibam, but when we're doing Yibam,
you know what is Yibam?
No.
Okay, you have to resign.
Okay, so,
Yibum first.
A man and a woman, they have children. Okay.
A man and woman, you know, we are married, we then have children, and the man is dying. And after his death, there is a mitzvah, according to the Torah, that the brother, yes, should marry the widow to give a descendants to his deceased brother. So it seems very strange why he did so. Rabbi Nachman Mibreslav explains like this. That if, for instance, you have a brother divorced his wife, you are not entitled to marry this divorcee, yes, because she is still considered as if she is your brother's wife. But once he dies, and he dies without children, it becomes a mitzvah to marry the widow. If he has children, it's forbidden to marry the widow of your brother, Isur Shetah. But if he doesn't have children, it's a mitzvah. So how can it be that something which is forbidden becomes a mitzvah? Rabbi Nachman Mibreslav explains like this, Gani. He says that every person comes to this world to reveal a special light. So if you are the brother of X or Y, it means it's not by chance that you were born in the same family, that obviously you have lights to reveal which are near to each other. That means your life resembles, looks like his light. So that's the reason why, if he has already children, if he already revealed his light, because to have children means to reveal your light, you shouldn't take the widow, because we tell you, your lights are very closed, very similar. So don't build in the same field with the same woman, because the purpose is to widen the light and not to make it narrow. Okay. But you understand what I mean?
Yeah, but also,
but in case he didn't reveal his light. That means he didn't have children. So why do you take the widow? Because you are told, who else can reveal the light of your brother who didn't reveal his light because he didn't have children? Who else than you, that you are very close to him, could reveal this light? You understand what I mean? That's the reason why you take the widow to have the children that he didn't have. And this is subconsciously, I think, even among the non-Jews. You see, for instance, when G.F. Kennedy yes, was assassinated, America asked Robert to be the next president, and he almost succeeded, but he was also murdered during the campaign. And then they asked Edward, Ted Kennedy, as if there is an idea that something that someone couldn't do, couldn't achieve, couldn't finish, only his brother can finish. And this is the idea of Hebrew, in the way that the mystics, the Jewish mystics, is explaining, according to Rabbi Nachman Mibreslav. You understand what I mean? You wanted to say something?
No.
Okay, you won't.
What about kings? Kings inherit the harems of previous kings. They can do that. Like, even a king can inherit even his father's previous wives from his father's harem, or his, even his brother's harem, if his brother was the previous king. And this is only a privilege of the kings, and no other person can do that.
Yeah, but the thing is, in the Torah, it's not only for kings, it's for everybody. It means that we have to understand why. If my brother, I say my brother because I don't have any brother, so I can speak like this. If my brother died without children, it's a mitzvah to take the widow and to give, so to say, a descendant to my brother, although he's died. He died now. But if he left children after him, it's completely forbidden. It's very, very serious prohibition to take the widow, although he died. So Rabbi Nachman Mibreslav explains why here it's completely forbidden and why suddenly it becomes a mitzvah.
No, my question is that what I was going to say was, even if there are children, the king, if the brother was a king and the next brother becomes a king, that previous brother didn't have sons, but even if his father's wives gave children to his father, he can still take them because he's a king.
I never heard such a thing. I'm very amazed. Because I learned the Gemara Yibumus, and they did not mention, as far as I can remember, such an exception.
I think that's not necessarily for the king to get all the wives. I think it's for someone to take care of the wives of the previous king.
Yeah, but to marry the wife, the widow, although the previous king had children, I don't think so.
It's also, you can't marry your stepmother, you can't marry your father's widow. It's in Leviticus, I think. It gives all the examples.
That's why the issue was...
Okay, let's go further. So now you see in Yibum that normally according to Torah, why do you do Yibum? In order to give a descendants to your deceased brother. But the problem is that according to the Halacha, and it's written like this in the Rambam, suppose that the widow is old, zekena, or shatata kos ikarim. She drank a beverage to become barren, not to be pregnant anymore.
She sterilized herself.
So the thing is, she sterilized herself, yeah, by a beverage at that time, and so she cannot give birth to any child. She cannot get pregnant. So normally I would understand that there is no mitzvah of Yibum. You say in English, levirate.
Leverite.
Leverite. Okay, so why should I marry her? She cannot have children anymore. So I can give a descendant to my brother who is deceased. And the answer is like this. The answer is that the relationship that I will have with this woman is like giving a descendants. Why? Because I will bring something new to the world, my relationship with this woman. And this is also giving birth to something. To such an extent that we see in the Chumash that Sarah and Avraham converted many people. Anefesh asher asu b'charan. There are several explanations that Rashi is quoting there. What does it mean? The souls that they made in Haran. According to one explanation, it means that Sarah was converting the women and Abraham was converting the men. And why? The Be'er Mayim Chaim explains like this. For a long time, Sarah was barren. She couldn't have any child. Yes? and he had a child. She had a child by a miracle, Yitzchak, when she was already 90 years old. But all the time, during all the time that Sarah couldn't have a child, nevertheless, there was sexual intercourse between Abraham and Sarah, and it was done in a good, in a good spirit, in a spirit of kedusha, of holiness. So since they had this, all this sexual relationship, and it couldn't give birth to a child, nevertheless, it gave birth to a child. Which child? All the converts that they made, all the people that they converted. Why? Because it's written, Ger shenitgayer kekatan shenolad dame. When someone is converting to Judaism, it's like a new baby who is born. So you see from this that the relationship in itself is giving birth. Even if there is no possibility to give birth, somewhere, somehow, we don't know how. So I think, this is my personal interpretation that I discussed with the Talmid Chacham on this, that although she is old, you make the Yibum. Why? Because the relationship in itself is giving birth somewhere, somehow. Not to a baby, she won't be pregnant, but there will be something from this. So we see there is a widened, so to say, conception of procreation in the Torah. And through this, we can understand why Elkanah say to Hannah, why do you cry? Because you don't have children. But I am better for you than 10 sons. Yes? Because the relationship in itself is like giving birth to a child. Yes? This is the way we can understand this. And indeed, you see that it's written, just I finish, Ele toldot Noach. These are the descendants of Noah. And the descendants of Noah, the verse is quoting Shem, Ham, Yafet, three boys, three sons, Gani. Mm-hmm. But, when you say, these are the sons, these is the descendants of Noah, you expect to listen to the list of the children. But between the two verses, Elet Oldot Noah, these are the descendants of Noah, and the name of the children,
it got dry because there was no cap. If you don't put the cap, it gets dry. Listen,
I have one in my. I need this. I have one in my. I think in my bag. It's just 1 second. I need it.
Actually, it's in Mishnah Torah. I believe they talk about a king can inherit the harem in his king, even if that king is related to
Jewish king. But I don't think so.
It is. Only a king is allowed to do this. Nobody else. Only a king. Because the reason is that if a woman becomes part of a king's harem, she's not allowed to marry a non-king anymore. She's forbidden to everybody and every other man of the world. Goyim, non-Jew, Jew, non-Jew, she's forbidden to every other man who's not a king, a Jewish king. That's the law. So that's the point. Like, say a woman wants to marry a king, then gets divorced, that means she's not going to be able to allow to another man ever again. Unless...
If she's Jewish, she can't marry a Jew. Same thing with you.
She can't marry a Jew either.
If she's a religious, she can't marry, because she's divorced. She can't marry a Jew. Jew cannot marry a divorced.
Yeah, but she can't marry anybody. Unless the king dies and his son takes over, she can't marry anybody. That's the thing. The king can take her back, but she can't marry anybody.
So what's wrong with that? A Jewish...
Yes, that's
Jewish in the harem with somebody who could have converted or just never.
No, any woman.
He took a slave from a different country.
If he took a captive, he can't marry her. A king's not allowed to marry captives, like a Kohen. He's not allowed to marry a captive. David married his captive. That was forbidden. That was one of his sins. That's why he got out of Shalom. You're not allowed to marry a captive.
Permanent marker.
Uh-oh.
It means it cannot be raised unless have some more
alcohol.
Alcohol, yeah.
So these are the descendants of Noah.
Okay. Then it says Noah. I will have to buy. I have Economica.
I think that
bleach. I have bleach.
I also have spray.
No, I have bleach. Bleach is good for this.
Is it white bleach?
I can bring you in the spray.
It has the chemical.
You have? Okay.
Yeah, I'll bring it up to class.
The Ulman teacher, he will be angry with me.
He'll be curious. He won't be here today, so it gives us a bit of time. There is a sign here that today he is absent.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There's a water in his apartment.
Okay, okay. We have time. Okay, so let's go.
This is the descendants of Noah. Noah is Tzadik HaYad Dovav.
And then he gives the name. Shem, Ham, Yafet. So,
Rashi is the same question. This is the descendants of Noah, so he should say Shem, Ham, Yafet. And in the middle it says, Noah is Tzadik HaYad Dovav. Noah was Tzadik among his generation. So this is not the descendants of Noah. So why do you put this here between this and this? Yes, you understand the question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The answer is
Ikar.
Be very careful of the word of Russian. Ikar, the main descendants of the Tzadik is Ma'asav Atovim, Ma'asim Tovim, his good deeds, his good actions.
He put the good actions of Noah, Tzadik, before the children because, of course, this is the descendants of Noah. But the main descendants
is the good deeds. How can we understand this? Listen well. In life, you do a lot of things. And then you have events which happen in your life and they don't depend on your decision. You meet this girl, you have a child like this, and so on and so on. But you have to know that all the things which happen in your life are just but a mirror of your actions. When you have an action, yes, you sow a seed in the earth. And then what happened in your life is the plant. Very often people are very surprised because they have a child which is not at all according to the values that they try to give to the child, according to the education. It's a very big surprise. Either for good, you see people who become Talmid Chacham and become from a family which is not at all religious. And you see also the opposite. Why? Because the way the people behave all the life, yes, this will be reflected one of these days in the child. This is, we have to be very careful on every action because every action has an influence. That's the reason why when we speak of procreation, it begins in day-to-day life, what you do, what you don't do. This is very important. And it's written in Pirkei Avot, if you don't want to sin, you have to know what is above you. That means the Elbester. What is the Elbester? God. The Elbester. The Almighty. Yeah, I was taught Elbester. Many years. That means you have to know, if you don't want to sin, you have to know what is above you, namely God. The Elbester is the God who can do everything. But the Hasidim read this in another way. Da ma lemala mimcha, they read like this. Da, no, ma lemala, which is decided above in heaven, mimcha, comes from you. Da, no, ma lemala, which is above, which is in heaven, which is decided by divine providence concerning you, there, above the clouds, yes, above the matter, mimcha, everything comes from you. You have the key of the lock. David, you understand?
Mimcha.
Mimcha means from you. So now, we see also, it's written, for instance, Ele toldot Moshe ve'Aaron. These are the descendants of Moshe and Aaron in the parasha. And then he's mentioning only the children of Aaron and not the children of Moshe. And Moshe had children, two sons. So when he says, these are the descendants of Moshe and Aaron, why afterwards, Rashi is asking, he's mentioning only the sons of Aaron and not the sons of Moshe. And Rashi is explaining that since Moshe taught them Torah, they are counted as his children, his sons, although they were born through Aaron, but they were taught by Moshe Torah. So Moshe gave them life, because we explained at the beginning of the shiur, at the lecture, that life in Hebrew is not only to breathe, to eat, to sleep, it's to live on an upper level. To have Torah gives a meaning to your life, so that's the real life. And that may be the reason why in Hebrew the word life is always in plural. In English you have life and lives. Yes? In German, same thing. In French, something. Same thing. But in Hebrew you cannot say the life. You always say the lives. Maybe one of the reasons, I think, is the fact that life is not one aspect of life. There are several aspects all the time. Yes? Another reason, I think, is the fact that life can always be recreated. That means that if you missed something in life and you think that your life is finished, no, it's not like this. Life, you know, there is what is called in American resilience. That means that you can transform the obstacle, yes, into a diving ball to go further. Why? Because you have in yourself the strength to transform, as I say, past into future. If you really want to rebuild your life. And this is also one of the reasons why life is always a plural. Life is not a singular. It's not because life was not okay in this country, in this neighborhood, in this field of business, that life is finished. No, there are plenty, plenty, infinite other possibilities. And this is the strength of the Jewish people, which enabled these people to survive during thousands of years of persecution, and exile, and so on. Please, you wanted to ask a question. Gani.
I was going to say, one of the things at Hillel, there was this rabbi who came, and he's also Russian background. One of the things he says, like, there are a lot of Russian Baal Teshuvas. And one of the things he says about Russian parents is that they are kind of religious, except they just don't want to take the last step. They're very, you know, they don't want to do everything, but they're like, for example, you know, to a Reformed Jew or like an American, these Russians would be like, they're too conservative, they're too traditional, they're too, you know.
Okay, I understand. So now I want to summarize all that I said. What's the connection with Rosh Hashanah? Because we see in the text of the Haftarah that we are going to read in Rosh Hashanah, that when Hannah is afflicted by the fact that she doesn't have child, she cannot bear a child, so her husband tries to comfort Hannah by saying, why do you weep? Am I not better for you than 10 children? So we try to understand the whole background of this in the whole Torah. That in the Torah, to give birth to a child is not only to have a child in flesh and bones, with blood. It's wider than this. All that you do, all your actions, first of all, are giving birth to something. And also, when you give Torah to a child, when you give meaning to the life of someone, it's as if you give birth. And we spoke of Sanhedrin, we spoke of the Chochmah Shlomo concerning the adoption. It's a wider conception of life, so it's a wider conception of giving birth. And the main thing for our Haftarah of Hannah, that the Be'er Mayim Chaim says that why Sarah and Avram were so successful in converting people to, not to Judaism at that time, to monotheism. Yes, the belief in one God, it's because all the years that Sarah was barren, she couldn't bear a child, and nevertheless they had sexual intercourse between them, so the sexual intercourse nevertheless was not lost, was not in vain. It gave birth to children. Which children? The people that they converted. Because when someone is converted, yes, it's like a new birth. It's a new life. It's a new soul. It's completely new. And since they had sexual intercourse and it couldn't give birth to a child here and now, a child with flesh, bones and blood, don't worry. There will be another child. These are all the converts that they made. It is also a birth. So we see, and that's the reason why in Yibum, if you take the text of the Torah, I just summarize, yeah? You see that it's supposed to be done in order to give descendants to your deceased brother who couldn't have any children, so you will have children with his widow. So in such a case, why should I marry the widow anyway if she is barren or if she is too old to bear a child? Because the relationship in itself, in a spirit of holiness, this is giving birth to something. So you give birth with this widow who didn't give any child to your brother. So we see it's a wider conception of procreation. And all this, you have to suppose, in the words of Elkanah, Alo anochi tov lach me'asara banim, am I not good for you more than 10 children? How can you say such a thing to a woman who is afflicted by the fact that she doesn't have a child? Because he wants to show her that the relationship between a man and a woman is in itself giving birth to something very high. Yes? Did you understand what I say, Mr. Belaish? You will be very famous because it's recorded. You will be on YouTube. Yeah? Did you understand what I say? Yes? You didn't listen so well. Because you came late and then you were thinking of something else. It's not a reproach that I'm doing, but it's a pity. You have to grasp the opportunity to learn. The opportunity to learn is more than gold. You have to grasp it. And to empty the mind, I know it's difficult, you have to empty the mind by the time of the lecture. Please.
I remember my question. Okay. So, if I didn't learn about the Bachman, in other words, the response that he gave, am I not worth more to you than 10 children? If I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, he had another wife, and he had children by the other wife.
Rabbi Nachman?
No, Elkanah. Pnina, right?
Pnina had children.
Right, okay, so what I'm saying is, so it would have seemed to me, I'm not so sad like you, because I already have children, you know, 7 children. What happened was that they all died because I think she was very nasty to kind of tease her, you don't have any children or whatever it is. But my point is, he already had children, 7 I think she had, to me, from Elkanah. So his response, maybe, deep down, he said, I already have children, I have nobody, you know, so that's why he said, you know, am I not more important to you than because he already had children?
No,
maybe if
so.
He didn't have Pnina, he didn't have, maybe he would have been more sympathetic. I don't know.
I don't think like you, because okay. He is trying to comfort Hannah. So if he wants to comfort her by saying,
comfort her,
I don't mind because I have already children, it's not a consolation. On the opposite. Yeah? So I think he just wants to emphasize the positive points. That means the relationship between them. Okay, maybe
she would say, you know, you're selfish. In other words, if she didn't understand, you know, okay, I don't want to do that.
Yes?
Can I ask, after Shmuel was born, did Hannah have any more children?
This I don't know. But she had Shmuel. Shmuel was a very, very, very big man, you know.
Oh, also, one of the things about Shmuel is actually Elkanah, or either Hannah, they're descendants of Korach. It's because of Shmuel that Korach actually sinned, because when he saw in the vision,
yeah, Shmuel was a descendant of Korah. Okay, but gentlemen, maybe we shouldn't scatter the topic so much, and we should focus on the main issue. issue. Yeah, please.
Well, let's say today's modern day, when people aren't allowed to have children, they usually adopt children. And many Jewish couples who adopt children, even though their children are not born as Jews, they don't necessarily, like, let's say, force them to convert. Some of them do. They make conversions when they're a child and even have to read their lives. But they raise them in a Jewish household, and that usually, like, also. So this is also like some of the Masim Tovim. So what you're saying is that, if I get this right, that it's not really about the fact of having children, bringing them up, but doing good deeds that will raise children that may not be even your own. It may not even be someone in your household at all. Like, maybe even your good deeds will affect your neighbor. Things like that, and this is what's really planting the seed of life. So sometimes, if you can't have children, not really to be so concerned with that, but you're so like making the world fruitful, to say, by your actions.
No, the thing is like this: there is an obligation in Torah. The first obligation, the commandment which was given to Noah, because to Adam it's a blessing, but to Noah it's a commandment. Yes, be fruitful and multiply. Thing is, this is an obligation that you cannot avoid. You have to, as much as you can. You have to do your best in order to come to this obligation. Now, besides this, you have the good deeds and all the things which are considered as giving birth. Yes, of course. But you have anyway an obligation. And the thing is, we spoke of the Chochmat Shlomo, who is asking the question if adoption can be considered as fulfilling your obligation of procreation. And we saw what he says, and so on. It's not an easy issue. I don't want to come to go back to this. It's anyway recorded. Yeah? But there is an obligation like this. And the thing is, which is very interesting, that to fulfill the obligation, the children, yes, have to be alive at the moment, yes, that the person dies. If the person dies and the children are no more in this world, he didn't fulfill his obligation. Here it's a good one. Here it can be erased. And the Shulchan Aruch says like this: suppose you have a man. See? Yes. And this man has a son and a daughter. Yes, David, you see the black ball? The white ball? You see the ball? Okay, you could just move a bit. Yeah? So this man has a son and a daughter. And when he dies, they died before him, he didn't fulfill the mitzvah. But if this son, yes, has for instance a daughter, and this daughter has a son, he fulfilled the mitzvah. Why? Because since they have children, it's considered as if they are still in this world. Now, I take another example. A has a son and a daughter. So the son has a son and a daughter. And the daughter has nothing, zero. They die. So when this man dies, yes, he has a grandson and a granddaughter through his son. He didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Piriyah V'Riviyah. So what's the difference? Here, the two children died. And here, the two children died. Here, you have two grandchildren, a granddaughter and a grandson. And here, you have also a grandson and a granddaughter. Here, the mitzvah of procreation is considered as fulfilled by the grandfather A. And here, the mitzvah of procreation is not considered as fulfilled by the grandfather A. Here, you have grandson and granddaughter. Here, you have grandson and granddaughter. So what's the difference? I want you to tell me.
Because because I think it's because his daughter wasn't able to fill that mitzvah.
As if he's missing.
The thing is like this. Listen very well. Since this son left the daughter, and since this daughter left the son, it's as if she survives and he survives. So it's as if my son and my daughter are still alive at the moment I die. Because they survive through the descendants. But here, my daughter didn't leave anything behind her, so she didn't survive. My son survived, my daughter didn't survive. She didn't have any descendants. Only my son survived through his descendants. So it's as if I had only a son and I didn't have a daughter. So that's the reason why the mitzvah is not accomplished. It's not fulfilled. So what do we see from here? We understand from here that a man survives through his descendants. Ma zahu b'chaim af hu b'chaim. Chazal say, if his descendants is still alive, he is still alive. Why? Because here, this man didn't accomplish Priya Viridya. But he has a grandson and granddaughter. Yes, but they come from the son. The daughter didn't have anything. So it's as if this man didn't have a daughter. He had only a son. So it's not complete. It's just half. But here, my son and my daughter, all of whom have passed away now, but they left. She left something, and he left something behind then. So he is still alive, and she is still alive. That means, as long as you have descendants, you are alive. So, to have descendants means to defeat the idea of death. Yes? And what is said concerning the children, the same thing is said concerning the pupil or disciple. Why? Because Moshe says at the end of his life, in the last parasha that we are going to read very soon before festival and after, I mean, between Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot, Moshe said, I know that after my death, these people, this nation, the Jewish nation, will be corrupted, will sin. And Chazal asked a question, how Moshe could say that after his death, this nation will go astray, away from the Torah. It's a well-known fact that during the whole life of Yeshua, the disciple of Moshe, who came behind his master, he succeeded to his master. Yeah. The people of Israel was very okay in the mitzvahs, very holy people. And Moshe says, after my death, these people will go astray. What do you mean after your death, these people will go astray? After your death is Yeshua, your successor. And during the life of your successor, your disciple, everything will be okay. It's just after the death of Yeshua that they will go astray. So now, how can you understand? How Rashi is answering this question?
Because Yeshua being a disciple, kind of like being a son of Moshe Rabbeinu.
So it's like?
It's like he still carries on Moshe Rabbeinu's
it's
life.
It's like Moshe Rabbeinu himself. As long as Yeshua, the disciple of Moshe, is alive, Moshe considers that he's alive. So that's the reason why, even if the people go astray after the death of Yeshua, and not before, nevertheless Moshe says, these people will go astray after my death. Because the death of Yeshua is my death. Because Yeshua is me. Because he is my disciple. So you survive through your children and through your disciples, through your pupils. Okay, you want to say something?
I just want to comment that the answer that you just gave me is contradictory. Because you're saying, okay, let's say that Sarah never bore Yitzhak. But you're saying that there still was not, the relationship was not in vain because they had converts. And the converts they were able to bring about.
It's a kind of survival.
It's kind of a survival, but also like how you just said, it's like as if Yeshua was in place of Moshe himself. So if people were not able to have children, they were able to influence Hashem's glory unto them and make them also like, you know, like close to Torah and be people who keep Torah and mitzvot. It's almost as if there's...
No, it's not contradictory. Why?
because you can say that you survive through your children and also through your disciples.
But some
you
have, you have to give on that children.
Okay, so you survive through all the things. Yeah. You survive through the books that you write, through the disciples that you have, through the broadcasting which will survive you.
That
means
that's sort of what my point was, is that if you're not able to have children, at least try to...
No, but the point is, what does it mean to have children? To have children means to have, according to the halacha, a son and a daughter. And besides this, even you have a son and a daughter, it's called mitzvah piriya derivya b'Torah. There is procreation in the Torah. Procreation in the Torah means to write books, to have disciples, to leave something which will survive you. Why? Because the main thing of you is not your body. Your body anyway one day will be nothing, will be dust. The main thing of you is the meaning that you have in yourself, the Torah that you have in yourself. And you are, it's just embodied now through your body. But after you, it will be embodied through other things. And this is you. This is the real you.
That was sort of my point.
What do you say?
Because there are some people that are not able to have children. They're not able to, like, you know, the science, even with all the science that we have today, they're still not able to bear children. So what do? They try to do other things.
Yeah, but even a rab who have 10 children, 5 daughters and 5 sons, he has the obligation to procreate through Torah, to have disciples, to have not to stay as a nilan schak, means a barren tree which doesn't have fruit. You have to give, to give, to give, to give. And in Hebrew, if you see well, the word to give, Natan, David, you see Natan, you can read it this way and this way. Nun, Tav, Nun, Nun, Tav, Nun. Same thing in English. Natan, Natan, Natan. Yes, in French it's called palindrome. Something. How do you say it?
Palindrome.
Palindrome. It's a Greek word indeed, because palin in Greek means reverse. Palin. Yeah? So palindrome, you say?
Yes.
Okay. So the thing is, why is it like this? Because they want to show you that once you give, you receive. You receive only what you give, either in good things or, chas v'shalom, in bad things. Life, what happens to you, it's like the translation of what you are and what you sowed in the field of life. Please.
Question. His brother passes away. So it happens that he should, and his brother left no descendants, no children at all. So the question is that this man who should be forgiven has one wife, and the wife is the sister of his brother's wife. In other words, so what happens in a case like this? He has to divorce his wife so he can, because you can't be married to two sisters, right? So does this mean he has to divorce his wife, take the sister
No, he doesn't have, because in that case...
Or he can't at all marry the sister.
No, in that case, you have the mitzvah of chalitza anyway. It means like this. Once a woman is a widow and her deceased husband didn't have any descendants,
right,
she's obliged to marry the brother, even today. But there is a way to avoid this, is chalitza. Chalitza.
Right. But
and today we don't make Yibum. We make only chalitza. Why? Because there is a discussion in the Gemara, what is the bigger mitzvah, Yibum or chalitza? And at the end we say that chalitza, some say that it's better. Why is it better to do chalitza? Because if you don't do Yibum with the spirit of the mitzvah, to give a descendant to your brother, and just because you are attracted by the beauty of the woman and no more, so it's as if you don't perform the mitzvah, as if. And if you don't perform the mitzvah, it's as if you take someone who is forbidden to you. That means the wife of your brother. The wife of your brother is forbidden to you. for your own life, even if she's divorcee, even if she's well widow and she has children from the and he had children, yes. The only way to permit it and to make it a mitzvah is when there is a mitzvah to give a descendants to your brother. But if you don't care of this, you just want her because she's beautiful, so it's as if you go with the wife of your brother when she's not permitted to. Not in fact, but in spirit. The spirit of the thing. You understand?
Yeah.
So today, we don't practice Yibum. In Morocco, in North Africa, they were practicing Yibum very late. I know someone who is a grand, he's a grandchild of a Yibum. Yes, but today we don't do it anymore. We do Charitza. And in case I have to disturb my life so much that I'm already married with indeed. That's the first myth, the first Mishnah of Yebama. Chamesh Eschen Hashim, yeah. That in this case you don't need even Chalitza. I have to see in the Mishnah that since, for instance, you are married, yeah, since she's forbidden to you, she's the sister of your wife, so you don't have even to make Chalitza. You are, there is no mitzvah of Yibum in this case.
So which means that she can marry a Kohen, because she doesn't, in other words, he doesn't have to give a Chalitza.
I think
my question
so.
Is,
no.
She doesn't have to, she can marry a Kohen, or she still can't marry a Kohen?
I mean, we are away from our topic.
Okay.
I think so. According to my remembrance, in the first Mishnah of Yebamot, there are 15 women who don't need Chalitza, according to Beit Hillel, okay. And this is the
meaning
halacha.
They can wear the
no,
they,
because there is a prohibition to marry her.
Okay.
There is a prohibition to marry the sister of your wife, yes, except if Chas v'Shalom someone is a widower, so he can, yes, marry the sister of his previous wife.
I was going to ask.
And it happens very often.
Yeah. In other words, his wife passes away and he can marry. She only has one sister and you can marry the sister.
He can marry the sister even if he has children. It doesn't matter. He can, yes.
I was going to say, in the case of Yehuda and Tamar, Tamar was married to two of his sons. So he interrupted the halitza and took her from self. So that means that father can potentially.
You go very far away. Listen, this is another thing. The Rambam says that before the Matan Torah, the Yibum could be made also by the father of the deceased husband and not necessarily by the brother. But, you know, we got into details which are a bit away from our topic. We don't need to get into all these details, but just I answer to you. Okay, so now I think it's the time. So tomorrow I go into the prayer of Rosh Hashanah, the Haftara, what was the characteristic of the prayer of Hannah, yes? And what do we have to learn, what do we have to draw, what lesson we have to draw from this for our prayer of Rosh Hashanah? In which spirit do we have to pray? Yes?
After this year.
Okay, fine.
Although, wait a minute, there is another question. What if you're a person who wants to have sons rather than daughters? You don't really, I mean, you wouldn't mind having daughters, but if you don't have sons, you'd be very depressed. You'd feel like your life is meaningless unless you have a son. Unless you have sons, you don't, if you're like, have daughters, you're like, oh, I might as well have not lived at all. I might as well have, in your eyes, the important thing is to have a son rather than daughter.
Okay, but you have to give birth to a son and to a daughter. You cannot choose. This is the obligation of the daughter. You know, there was here in a hospital of Israel, there was a good Jew. You know, the Sfardim, they are very particular to have sons. Yeah? It's a well-known fact. And there was a good Jew from North Africa, and he had five daughters. Yes? And his wife was pregnant, and she was giving birth right now to the sixth child, and he didn't know if it was a daughter or a son, yeah? And suddenly the nurse is getting out of the room, and the nurse, yes, tells him, Mr. Ben Simon, Mr. Ben Susan, whatever, yeah, you have a sixth child. So he says, yes, but what it is? So she says, a daughter. So he cries, he shouts, a daughter. I have already 5 daughters, and again a daughter. The nurse, yes, went away into the room, and the daughter asked the nurse, why is he crying, this man? Why is he screaming like this? So she explains the matter. So the doctor gets out of the room and he says, Mr. Bensing, excuse me, it was a mistake. It's a son, it's not a daughter. So Mr. Ben-Simon says to everybody, you see, I was always telling you that in this country, by shouting, you can get everything.
That's very good.